but we'll pick up with these different the different habits.
John, can I ask you to please say a prayer before we begin?
Sure. Father in heart, which art in heaven, we are thankful for this great blessing of the gift of this gorgeous day, this beautiful fall day. Look around and see all the great blessings you have sent to us in the nature and our friends and being able to gather with other Christians here who have a like mind and a like goal to worship you and praise you. We're thankful for this class that has been put together. We're thankful for Larry and for Anthony for their talents and abilities to relay your word to us. Ask that we would have open minds and focus our thoughts on you at this time. Be with us throughout this hour and this day. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Okay, so let me just kind of get a feel. What is y'all's impressions of the material, of the topic that we're involved in?
It's a useful perspective.
Okay, useful perspective, right? I think it's important to remind you that while these habits, they're not just good suggestions. And again, I'm not a disciple of Stephen Covey. I do enjoy reading his books. And these seven habits have about 20 some odd years of research. These are consistent habits that Covey has found that are common threads through the affected people. And then he translated that into habits when you kind of evaluate families, marriages, those that are affected. These are common traits, common habits shared by the majority of families that are affected. Not necessarily successful, but things that are you are changing things. You are an instrument of change to the better. That kind of working definition of that. So, and that in and of itself doesn't mean much. It gets to the root of some credibility with it. But this is not original to Covey. This is original to the Scriptures, quite frankly. I mean, when you look at these seven habits, and you can start looking at the different characteristics that the Apostle Paul talks about, people that are effective in the kingdom of God, people that have effective marriages as described by Paul and about Jesus, all those things are common. They're consistent habits that we need to have. And I hope that you see, when you kind of look at these different habits, that while we're applying them to our families, to our marriages, to our relationship, to our kids, but they apply in your work environment. They will apply in your neighborhood. They will apply in so many different kind of relationships that we have. And we have a lot of different relationships. These sorts of things apply. And so that's, for me, when I read the original book back in 1980-something, whatever that was. Yes, I'm old. Then, it resonated with me then, and then this book came out, and David Maxwell was the one that kind of, turned me on to it. For those of you who know David, he's now in Alabama. And again, it took it to a different level as far as I was concerned regarding the importance of these different habits that as they exist in our lives and in our different relationships that we have. So I hope that you find that they are valuable. And I think, apparently there's no shortage of funny little things on the internet when you type in examples of poor communication. Were you weren't even listening, were you? And I thought that was a funny way to start a conversation. I think that's true. Only two people in the room and somebody is talking, right? And, I thought you were talking with somebody else. I will tell you, though, and I've mentioned this before, that the male brain is not capable of multitasking as well as the female brain. So I would ask a little higher level of patience on the female brain with the male brain that is currently not listening because Alabama or Ohio State is playing on TV, and so you might not be listening as you might want. Now, then there's others that are or, you know, I guess more to the point, you know, it would be nice if every once in a while I would get credit for hearing the first part of almost everything you say, you know. So that would be nice, I think. And I think finally, yeah, so something was said or done, and at least now she has his attention, right? So sometimes, you know, you're thinking, I don't know if that's what you would call a win-win or not. Now, by the way, when you think about win-win, I'm not sure where this came from, but there was a gift for me last Wednesday night waiting at the front door of the building. And it just says to Elder Larry Brown. And if you remember, this is the blue plate, not the exact blue plate, that my mother broke into 1,000 pieces. That was her definition of a win-win, because she decided to break the plate that all four of us would always fight over, causing all kinds of chaos for every single meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So my mother decided to break the plate in front of us. So I appreciate whoever it was. This is an anonymous gift. And I appreciated whoever it was that gave me the blue plate. What I hope to do this afternoon is to take a picture of this plate and send it to my three brothers. And just remind them that I salvaged the pieces. I glued them back together. I have the plate, and I am 600 miles away. Anything about it. So thank you for the blue plate. I thought that was very sweet, or whoever it was that did that. So what's poor listening look like? Well, we already saw what poor listening looks like. Tell me, when you're having a conversation with somebody, and it's pretty clear that they're not listening or they're not understanding. Remember, this particular habit is seek to understand whatever, you know, before you seek to be understood. Right? So that, and that's, you know, I think fundamental in communication. But what are the habits of bad listening? Yes.
Well, I am truly the queen of this. You have to actively be using your brain to listen instead of just zoned out when the other person is talking.
So when you say you're the queen of this, are you the queen of the opposite or queen of doing this?
I'm the queen of doing this.
You are the queen of...
I'm really bad about really listening. When Jason's talking.
Well, none of us really listened when Jason talked.
Tony gets mad because he can see it on my face. It's like you're not listening.
Oh, Jason. Okay, so yeah, you don't do this. You don't actively, intently listen. You are thinking of a million other things that are going on. Yes. Well, again, it's Jason. So no. Yes.
When you start your response, as they're still spilling out the last four or five words.
Yeah, like I just interrupted you. Right. Yes, exactly. That was just an example. I was intently listening to what you said. Yeah.
Or relatedly, just focusing on your response while they're still making their.
Correct. And now we do that a lot. Susan, you had something?
What? I was,
is this an example of your relationship with?
No. There's two people that every time I talk to them, they're looking the other, like they're looking around.
Right.
And it's like I can tell they are not paying attention to a word that I'm saying.
Right.
And that's very annoying.
It is.
So they're just looking around.
Yes,
did
it is, Susan.
It's not you, Larry.
It's not me. That was close. It is not me. Yes.
This
would it help if I wouldn't start reading my notes while you're talking? Would that be a PM with that? Go ahead.
This might seem basic, but I think you can't have this conversation in 2019 without saying, you got to put your phone down.
Oh, away, yeah.
Face down.
Yeah.
If it involves taking your watch off.
These days.
Get rid of the distractions.
Yeah.
And that may depend on the seriousness or level of the conversation. Mm-hmm. But the phones, that distraction,
yes.
Or even the potential for that
right.
distraction needs to go away.
Yes. I have some coworkers that will pause. They create a pause in the conversation. And then will say, I really need you to listen right now. And when they say that, it kind of is a slap in the face in a nice way. And I put everything down at that point, and I lean across my desk, and I say, okay, now I have my undivided attention. But But sometimes, and that's a bad thing, that they have to say that to get 100% of my attention, right? That kind of thing, I think, happens to us. And, you know, so you could kind of, again, look at, you know, from, you know, in a six-year, you know, period of time, two different studies that we're doing, bad listening habits with, I'm not interested in the subject that you're talking about, right? So that's, and I get that a lot from my children. You know, I told a story one time where my daughter asked why is there dew, and I got excited because I thought she was talking about enthalpy, and I started talking all going, you know, all kinds of different curves and the dew point and everything that was out there, and she really just was upset because there was now water on her brand new shoes. That was really all she, because she had no interest in the subject matter, and I did, right? So she wasn't listening at all. Not, you know, focusing on the person, right? So they have the parsley stuck between their teeth, right? They're talking, and you look like you're looking at them, but no, you're not paying attention to anything that they say because you're just focused on whatever matter is in their mouth. Interrupting, I think, is the thing that happens more often than not. You know what your response is going to be. Why do I need to allow you to finish that sentence? Because my answer is going to be the same regardless of how you conclude that sentence. But what does that communicate, obviously, right? So it doesn't help. And a lot of other things. We miss the big picture, you know, creating or allowing distractions. That would be these days. You have to make sure that they don't happen. I don't know, all kinds of things. Not looking at the speaker. I think, Susan, you were talking about that. Interrupting keeps showing up. And I think we know the people that are constantly interrupting us, right? You know, whether it's in your marriage, your children, whatever, that they're just simply not listening. The common things, though, that I come away with all of that is, you know, simply that what these traits, what these poor listening habits communicate to the listener or the speaker in this case, is that you don't have respect for them. You don't have respect for the topic. You're kind of stuck in your own frame of reference, if you will. You know, you're right there, and they're really trying to get you to, especially in our marriages, there has to be that communication, and there has to be that knowledge that your husband or your wife is really listening, trying to understand your perspective. Remember the pictures Anthony showed? We showed her before about, you know, everybody has a different, you see the older woman before you see the younger woman in those pictures, or the Eskimo versus the woman, or versus the Indian. Everybody has a different perspective on things, and we have to understand that. We have to listen intently with how to understand that. You know, and a lot of other things I think that happen to us in that. And this was in the book with regard to kind of different listening that people have. I mean, there is the complete and utter, I'm just going to ignore you. I'm not going to pay a single bit of attention to what you're saying. I mean, that happens all the time. Unfortunately, it happens with our children, you know, because our mind is made up and this is going to be the way it's going to be. Pretend listening. You periodically, have you ever, or maybe it's just me, you're on the phone and you're doing multiple things, and I've had people say, stop typing, I can hear you typing, I need your attention, right? Because I will just simply go, uh-huh, yep, you know, and but there was a question and the answer could not be uh-huh. Because I wasn't listening to what they were trying to communicate.
That's when you go on mute.
What's that?
So you can't mute type, you go on mute.
Is that what it is?
That's a good one.
Yes. I need to add mute right there somewhere. Selective listening. What you know, so I hear the things that I'm interested in, or the things that you hear a hot word. And the hot word kind of shakes you. You haven't heard anything before, but that hot word, you now have the undivided attention, right? That kind of a thing happens. Attentive listening, but again, that's you're really not trying to understand their point of view. You're just you are listening and you're paying attention to what they're have to say, but you're not doing it trying to understand what they're looking at, you know, from their frame of reference. What is, it's got to be empathetic listening. Turn to Proverbs 18:13. I'm going to move my plate because I know some of you are going to take it. Who's got Proverbs 18:13?
He who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him.
Right. So, again, that is the fits in these categories. Yeah. Sure. This is the second time I've called you the wrong name. I'm not listening to you. Go ahead.
It's okay. Yes. Any name that begins with a K.
Perfect. Kircher. How about that? We'll go with that.
That's my dad's name.
Okay.
I just wanted to read. I'm using the GNT, the Good News Translation.
Yeah.
Kind of makes it even more, I guess, relevant modern language.
Yeah. What does it say?
It says, "Listen before you answer. If you don't, you're being stupid and insulting."
Wow. That does make it understandable. I will grant you that. Yeah. I mean, but it is insulting. Right? I mean, it is insulting to the person when you are interrupting, you're answering questions that they didn't even ask. That kind of thing happens all too often. But I think it makes the point. So when you look at how to listen with empathy, it is this, I read this, it is, you got to listen with your ears, your eyes, and your heart. What does all that mean? To listen with your ears, what does that mean? Is it just the words that you're trying to pick up on?
You have to actively listen.
Right. Sometimes it's voice inflection, isn't it, that you're listening for? Right. Sometimes what you're listening for is a little crack in the voice. Right. If and I say texting because you're not going to get that in the text. I have told my children 1,000 times that text, when it's an important topic, the worst method to communicate is through a text. Because you can't communicate your level of interest. You can't communicate your level of love to that person through this. Yes.
Well, with that texting, kids nowadays don't know how to communicate or listen because all they do is text.
That's it.
That's the only thing they know how to do.
Human interaction is waning, right? Because of that, absolutely, it's becoming more and more difficult for our kids to communicate, and then we have to watch out for that. But so listening with my ears attentively is really important because you're listening for how that voice, how are they communicating, not just their words. Clearly, we have to do that. So, but listening with my eyes, what does that mean?
Looking at the person, facial expressions,
right?
All that nonverbal language that you get.
Or that you are observing in the other person. Yes.
Yeah,
so body language, right? So when you start talking to me and I do this.
What'd you do?
I'm folding my arms. I'm folding my arms. When you talk, Chester, that's what I'm doing.
He's
rolling his eyes at me. Oh, there you go. Yep. We have a great relationship. That's what it means. So what does this mean, typically? Now, I fold my arms a lot and I really don't mean much on by it, but how is somebody going to interpret this?
Offensive.
Yeah, I'm what? I look bored. No, I have a whole different look for that.
Protected,
right? Well, yes. Oh, so when somebody has to tell you something, and the conversation starts with, "Now you're not going to like this," right? So then this posture is struck, right? But sometimes, now, you also have 100% of my attention when you start with, "You're not going to like this," right? And there is a tendency, I think, to shoot the messenger. We get mad at the messenger as opposed to the message itself, right? So I think that is. So I think we have to, listen with our eyes just as much as we listen with our ears, right? Again, sometimes that is just eye contact. Communicate that you are listening to what somebody is saying and doing. I think that is important. Yes, ma'am.
Chester, how he listens without
eyes. Chester, that's a great question. So how do you listen without your eyes, right? So you rely on the voice inflection more so than anything else, right? As far as the other senses kind of have to kick in, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's important, right?
Yeah.
To do that. But then the last one is listen with my heart. What is that?
You
guys have to
take care about what they're saying. It's not just a matter of, I hear you.
Right.
Like, how do I feel about what you're saying?
Right. Especially within our families and especially within our marriages, I love you and I really want to understand your perspective. I don't necessarily agree with what you're saying, but I want to understand. And so you really do have to listen with your heart. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Right. So, but that is, all those things are critically important, aren't they? When you talk about empathy and what is empathy, by the way? What it defined, we've talked about it a lot. So what is it?
So putting yourself in the shoes of the other person.
Right.
Taking on their perspective.
Empathy is the capacity to understand or feel what another person is experiencing from within their frame of reference. The capacity to place yourself in another one's position, right? And that's not, I mean, we listen with sympathy all the time, right? But we don't listen with empathy. You know, putting the person in and putting ourselves in their shoes. Yes, ma'am?
I was just going to say, too, I think sometimes when we're having a conversation, I will say, I don't need you to solve this. And I think
yes.
That's a good way to listen with empathy. Because then he knows that I really just need to sort of get out what I'm... Because that's my personality. I sort of sometimes need to vent my feelings.
Yes.
Not that I'm angry. And I'll say, I'm not angry at you. I just need you to listen.
Right.
And then sometimes when I'm done, he'll say, okay, I have an opinion about that. You know, are you open to hearing it right now?
That is one wise man.
And sometimes I am, and sometimes... Not always how our conversations go, but and I think I think that's something we've learned somewhat over the course
right.
of our marriage is, you know, that's because I don't always need him to tell me this is how to solve
right.
the problem.
And you should know that he's being very stoic. He's not nodding his head. He's not shaking
know.
His head. In fact, there's very little expression at all. Which
I think he's like, wish you'd been common in class.
Right. You couldn't tell that by the facial expression.
That's great.
Oh, that's true. So, yes, Andrew.
This is Jesus in John 11.
Absolutely.
If he just took it from his frame of reference.
Right.
I kind of mentioned this last time, but he understands that this is temporary. Totally
right.
temporary.
Uh-huh.
But he felt it through those his friends and those that he saw that were weeping over a lost
right.
friend or brother.
Absolutely. He is keyed into what the other person is going through. Yes, sir.
Kind of a continuum of these emotions and the way they interact with each other. I found something that defines pity as I acknowledge your suffering. Sympathy means I care about your suffering. Empathy means I feel your suffering.
Oh.
And then even beyond that is compassion, which is Jesus in John 11. I want to relieve your suffering. So as we work toward the right on that.
Right. I like that.
We can get ultimately to that.
Can you send that to me?
Better. Yeah.
If you don't mind. Because I can't remember what you said.
Weren't
so.
Listening.
Are you listening? I was thinking of my response to it. Yeah. No, it was very good. And it came.
You can see a lot of God's wisdom
yeah.
in the nature of how men and women are different and why a child
right.
Is oftentimes better off with two parents.
Right.
One of each sex. Why a husband and a wife can help each other
correct.
To such a degree. Why leaders, like elders, should have a wife.
Right.
You know, because they're better off. Sometimes I'm in a meeting with someone and I'm talking to them, and after the meeting my wife says, can you believe the way they were feeling about that? You know, and I don't have a clue.
Right.
It was all analytical.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and you know, so God has made fit for us to complement each other.
Right.
And to raise up our children in the right way.
Right.
And so much of the world wants to pretend that doesn't exist.
Right. And they do. And I think that the when we get to the next habit, that synergy idea of how the strengths and the weaknesses are made better. My weaknesses are complemented or overcome by Lynn's strengths and vice versa. So that I think that works out extremely well the way God designed it. And again, I'm trying to remember when we talk about this kind of thing. The overall goal here is to help our family life better, right? And so what we're trying to do is incorporate at a real level what Jesus has asked us to do, what Paul has asked us to do, to make our marriages and our family life better. I found this, so that, remember, I said early on when I talked to young couples, I teasingly say the best thing, I look at the husband, the best thing you could do is learn to say yes, ma'am. Right? Yeah, it's the best thing you can do, because you never really will win an argument with your wife. And obviously, I'm jesting. But this whole word sincere, which is interesting, it means without wax, technically, from the Latin. And apparently, it's a term used by sculptors as they're trying to sell their art. Some sculptors would hide the imperfections with wax. They would melt wax and smooth that over so that the buyer would think that the art was more valuable than it really is. So when I listen with sincerity, when I have this empathetic listening, but it's also sincere. I'm not just going through the motions. I'm not trying to mask some imperfection, and I'm not trying to pretend interest in what Lynn is trying to tell me. I am sincere about that. I am not trying to hide anything. It is everything about me because it revolves around what she is going through, and I sincerely want to listen, or I sincerely want to help, right? Those sorts of things. And she probably doesn't remember this, and early on she came home from work and was upset about something, about action of a coworker. And at one point, the actual words came out of my mouth that said, "You're just making a mountain out of a molehill." I did not earn Husband of the Year that year, but that was hurtful, right? That again, she wasn't asking me to solve the relationship at work. She just needed to get this off her chest. She needed somebody to listen to this situation that was occurring. At one point, she might have asked me my opinion. What do you think I should do? But after that response, she didn't ask at that point. It was the wrong thing for me to say. So, yeah, Susan.
I was just going to say, we do that with our children a lot.
Yeah.
And we need to really be careful, because to them it is a big, huge thing. And so if we just dismiss their feelings there's a balance there, but we just need to really be careful.
Yeah.
We're empathizing with our kids.
We do. I mean, a lot of times fathers don't understand fully what their 14, 15, 16-year-old daughter is going through. And my level of, empathy diminishes. And it ought to be just the opposite, I think, right? So what we've been talking about mostly, though, is this first part. Seek first to understand. So that's where our listening. What's the second part of this habit?
Then to be understood.
Then to be understood. Okay. Sure. So once you've listened, right, and you've heard what the other person has to say, sincerely and with empathy. So you really certainly care about what's going on. Now it's your time to make sure that you are understood. That's choosing your words carefully. That is now your answer should be based upon the frame of reference that your spouse or your child has now communicated to you. And oftentimes, through the first part, you have to ask a lot of questions to drill down to, what is the root cause? What is the real issue that's bothering you at this point? And you have to ask a lot of questions. And the questions themselves, again, we're doing this with sincerity. You're not just artificially just asking questions to feign interest. You're really wanting to understand. But now it's time for us to explain our side of the story, right? And that becomes imperative
that we do it in the way that the Lord wants us to. I'm going to whip through. I think Anthony already went through all these verses on Wednesday. I'm not sure what version it came from, but you know, you count all my tossing. But when I first read that, my sleeplessness, those days when I'm restless because something is on my mind, it's something that is sincerely bothering me. Those sorts of evenings or whatever, the Lord is mindful of that, and He's counting those tossings. He's keeping track of that, and He understands. And so when I come to Him with my problems, I know that He's listening, and I know that He cares. So those sorts of things when they're, the 1 Corinthians, or the 11, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. So again, it is that active listening that we have to have. And two-way communication. If one member suffers, we all suffer with it. So there's that. We'll talk about that same passage in just a moment when we talk about empathy. This is critically important, right? So let no unwholesome word proceed out of my mouth, but everything I say ought to be to build you up. That's an important lesson, I think, for all of us to take hold of and apply sincerely to our lives, that every and we said this a couple of times, everything that I say should have a purpose, right? And that purpose ought not to be, I need to get that last word in. My purpose should not be to show them. My purpose should not be to win the argument, right? That is not my purpose within my family, within any relationship. My purpose is to help the other person. So sometimes that means that you say nothing at all. That's a perfectly good thing to do, is not say anything at all, because you hit the pause button. That doesn't mean you ignore the topic or that you don't communicate about what's going on, but that is hitting the pause button in your life. So that what you say actually builds somebody up and doesn't tear them down and doesn't ruin the relationship and isn't hurtful. That I think is so important. These three verses that Anthony put up for us. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving. Tremendous characteristics that we have regarding somebody else is more important than ourselves. Have a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. You can see over and over again how each one of these passages deal with our relationships and how we communicate. The passage in James, in context, this is, and this gets right to the heart of listening. In context, what he's talking about is what God has been saying to us. And too many times we get angry with God with what He's already communicated to us, and we stop listening to what God is trying to communicate. And that's what James is saying in context. You take that into our lives and into our relationships, and it you can actually elevate that. If we are quick to speak and slow to hear, communication is a total breakdown, right? Especially when the conversation starts off with, "You're not going to like this." Now, if the other person has that idea of every word coming out of their mouth is going to build you up, if you have that level of trust in your spouse when they start the conversation off with that, then your wall, this ought not to happen. The wall ought not to go up. The defensive posture ought not to be present, because they're trying to build you up, and you ought to have the trust and the confidence that is their goal. And that is from a lifetime of putting those emotional deposits into your account, right? If you don't actively and ongoingly make those emotional deposits into your wife or husband's account, that when you so that if you then start a conversation off with, "You're not going to like this," you know what? If the bank account's at zero, then I'm defensive automatically because I don't trust you. I don't know what your motive is. Because the last time, You did it just to be mean. You didn't really care how I felt. So it all gets, you see how these habits build on one another. It is a lifetime of building trust and confidence in your husband or your wife or your children, that you listen and you care and you want to seek a win-win. You want to do all these other habits
Then when the conversation starts off with, you're not going to like this, whether that comes from your son coming into your room at midnight and saying, Dad, you're not going to like this. Well, you know what? That's a scary conversation starter, right? But you ought to be grateful that they're coming to you, and that you ought to listen to them and so forth. So all these things I think are so important for us to get through. So now that was a much longer review than what I intended. I'm very sorry about that, but it's a very important habit. Melissa, do you have a comment?
No, sorry.
So no, it's okay. That's okay. Any thoughts on that particular habit before we go to the next one?
You know, we learned with four kids that we needed to create a space in our house where it was most conducive to that very thing.
Okay.
We knew that we could go there. I'm very distractible. So we picked a space that's quiet, no TV, no windows for that matter. It's in the basement. Nice big whiteboard. And the kids tended to stay away.
Yes.
And we affectionately call it the war room. And so we know that, hey, can we meet in the war room tonight? It was going to be a good conversation, right. And we were engaged.
Right.
We still do it.
Yeah, and that's important, I think. You know, it ought to be a place or whatever it is that the person doesn't. You know, it's like when your boss calls you into their office and they close the door. Usually, you get a little nervous when that happens. Usually, you know, he's not giving you a huge raise, right? That kind of a thing happens. So, but you want to use that space both positively and negatively. Yes, ma'am.
I was just
going to
say, someone told me when our daughter, she just turned 12, she's our oldest, for those who don't know, but when she was a baby, someone told me, and I really took this to heart, to listen to the small things she told me when she was little, so she would come to me when she was older with the big things.
Yeah.
And so I really took that to heart, and sometimes I'm still shocked when she comes to talk to me about stuff, but I realize it's because I listened to the Disney Princess babble and to, you know, whatever it was. But I also think that can work in your marriage. So if you just listen when if he comes home and he's like, man, I had a bad day. And, you know, I have nothing to do with his job, you know,
right.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'll talk to me about it. And then I'm like, yeah, okay. But then when something really serious happens, he knows, or I know,
right.
that he'll listen or that I'll listen and
right.
then we can work through it together. Because we've listened to the stuff that doesn't really, quote, unquote, matter.
Correct.
So his
princess battle.
No. But it does matter. Does that make sense? Like what?
Right. You know, I'm going to have to use that. Princess Battle thing. I was thinking Charlie Brown teacher. Wah, 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 wah. That's what I was thinking.
Well, but also not just listen, but actively listen.
Right.
Like, with my daughter, maybe say, well, why does she want
right.
to do that? You know, so she
right.
knows I'm not just in one ear and out the
Correct.
Other.
Right. Yeah. You put the spatula down. You put whatever it is that you're doing down. And you respond. And I remember one time I had to have a conversation with Catherine, and she might have been a little younger than 12, but I said, you and I are going to go to McDonald's, you know, and get some dessert or something. And she was all excited until I brought up what I had to bring up. And then the next time I asked her, she got this petrified look on her face. She didn't want to go. And I said, no, seriously, it's just ice cream. That's all we're going to do. And I have nothing bad to say to you and so forth. Chester, you had a comment.
I was going to ask, who was that person?
That was Courtney Craig.
Right, in the back. Yes.
I'm listening to all of this. It just reminds me again that communication is a skill that can be gotten better at.
Yes.
Or gotten worse at. And I think it's somewhat, if not very, countercultural to develop that skill or go into a relationship or continue in a relationship
right.
wanting to develop that skill. I
right.
think there is an idea perpetuated by lots of things. That if you love someone, you will be automatically, you know, on their level, in their head, all the time. And it's not possible unless you are asking them what's in their head.
Right.
And creating, you know, Courtney's spoken a lot to that today, creating a safe space
right.
for someone to say what is in their head. And
right.
that goes for, you know, I think we want that, I feel like we should have that with our children as well. So you
right.
go, you know, you go into marriage, oh, we're so in love and we're so on the same level, it's not going to stay that way if you don't develop the skill to do that. And similarly, with your children, as much as you love them, you're right. not in their head. And the older they get, the more you're not in their head.
Right.
It appears.
Your sphere of influence diminishes sometimes.
Right, right. But there's a lot to be said that's in here. I mean, the Proverbs is full of listening and speaking things and to help develop the skills of a good communicator, both listening and speaking.
Right. It really does. Yes.
So you weren't supposed to be looking at your notes while we were
talking. I know, but I was intent to listen. I was trying to find something in Proverbs for it, so I was. You're right. I will be doing it. No, you better hurry up.
Just a question out of the, the topic was seek first to understand, that to be understood. And I wonder whether the author or maybe someone else kind of listed some of the responses from the other person. How did the other person respond to someone who kind of took that type of attitude or way of doing things? I didn't read the chapter.
Yeah, so no, I don't recall. Anthony, do you recall anything about the responses? I don't recall anything. Just a series of different ways in which we show that we are not listening.
I think, all of us can appreciate when someone's listening to us and putting, that idea of active listening or kind of reflecting, having the person try to understand what we're saying will make, I think the comment there was the influence that we can have is greater when they feel like we've listened and, we're trying to at least see their things from their point of view.
Right.
So I think that point was made in there somewhere.
I agree. There's a lot of letters or stories related in this particular chapter. By Covey. Sometimes it's from one of his children, sometimes it's from his wife, sometimes it's somebody that came up to him after a seminar that he gave, and he relates the story that takes these things, that lessons that other families have learned the hard way, more often than not, of people that don't listen to us and how they had to change that within their family. And a lot of that is a lifetime of making those emotional deposits, so that when you go to the war room, right, there is this knowledge that there is something that we all together need to work out, and that becomes an important aspect of it, because the one thing you have to create is the desire in the children to come. Right? If you haven't made those deposits, they ain't coming. They're gonna go somewhere else for that help, and sometimes we don't want them to go where they're going for help, for advice. So, but if we are constantly cutting them off and saying, that's not important, you see what happens when you hang out with bad people, that kind of a thing, just to shut it off automatically, then they're not going to come to you. And I think that happens over and over and over again. And the fact that when they stop listening because they picked up their cell phone, that kind of a thing is really detrimental to the long-term relationship. So, so this whole, what does synergy mean? Excuse me. We'll talk about it quite a bit. Yeah.
Basically like better than the sum of the parts.
Yeah. Right. So you have from a standpoint of when we look at up at the top in the blue, Covey calls that creative cooperation, value people's differences. And particularly that their strengths combined with what we have can make us better. Ephesians 4:16, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. So the best example that we have in Scripture about what synergy is the human body. In this context, Paul is talking about how the church ought to work. Yeah, Lindsay.
So, all due respect to Covey.
Yes.
I just looked at him and synergy is the most 80s business word ever. So, I think now inclusion might be more of, have some of the same connotations as synergy. It's a good word. I don't have an issue with the word.
Okay.
But I think just as a, maybe a synonym, I think inclusion might be sort of have a similar idea to it.
So I listen to you, and I disagree. emphatically.
I'm seeking to understand.
Yes, I am. So you're not going to like this. Oh, there goes the ghost. There goes the ghost. David, she's all yours.
Yes, she is.
Yes, she is. You deal with it. So, I have no idea where I was going. But, yeah, it may be, you know, from, you know, inclusion, I don't know. I think I get a different mindset when I hear the word inclusion.
I don't think they're the same. I don't think they're the same.
No, okay.
But I don't think they're exactly the same. But I think, can you go back a slide to look at the definition of it?
That.
Valuing people's differences.
Right.
And their strengths and the combination.
So more
that's,
from a...
That's what I sort of I'm sorry. Trying to hit.
So more from a diversity standpoint. There's value in diversity.
Yes.
Right? Is that kind
yeah,
of a...
I think so.
Thing? I tend to... maybe to my detriment, I tend to surround myself with people that don't look at things the way I look at them. I normally hire people that even in the interview process will disagree with me, because that means that they're going to tell me what they really think and not what they think I want to hear. And to me, that's more valuable. Now, every once in a while, you'd think that they would agree with me, but apparently they don't. You know, I would stumble upon something that they agree with.
So therefore, I'm valuable.
You are extremely valuable to David. Sorry. Thank you. We're gonna pick up the pace. We'll finish up
synergy.
Oh, we're not here on Wednesday. Next Sunday. We're not here on Wednesday. We'll all be in the auditorium. But Sunday, we'll pick up on this.